are the Mythbusters.
Mike Bask.
What do you mean, providing you don't move, it's good?
And Emma Bask.
Well, I can't see anything, but my head's roughly... I'll just move the things up here so I can read them.
Between them, more than 20 years of tournament experience.
They don't just tell the myths, they put them to the test.
Objective Secure Podcast. My name's Mike.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And this is episode 30, Mythbusters Part 2. If you've already listened to episode 29, you will have by now realised that that was going to be a two-part episode, which we've had to do a few times in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And what we thought was going to be a relatively short topic turned into something of a monster. So
it's quite funny because whenever I suggest a topic and Mike goes, oh, I don't think there's enough there to cover a whole episode, all of a sudden we're spreading it out over two episodes. I think there might be enough there for an episode.
It's because you talk.
Yeah, it's just me. Mm-hmm.
So we're here to talk about the second half of some of the myths that have been brought to us by players to start debunking and looking at with tournament play and gamers in tournaments and TOs in tournaments and all those sorts of things. Since the last episode and the editing, I did find my myth-busted stamp noise, so it does make the appropriate noises in the first episode, and it will do with this one as well.
Mm-hmm.
I also have to add, at this particular moment in time, I am so happy with the intro for these two episodes.
Oh my goodness.
I had so much fun mucking about and recording those two and editing them and whatnot. I wish I'd gotten someone else to do the voiceover, not you or I, and in hindsight, I could have grabbed one of the kids to do it. But it's too late.
We're not doing it again.
No, it's too late now, because by the time you're listening to this, where are we?
We can't say because the kids are still awake and they don't know.
Oh, that's true.
So
we're still on holiday.
Yes,
we are. At this moment in time.
We are very cold.
Yes, we are. And before we dive straight into the topic for this episode, I should also point out that the day of release, the day after, is Emma's 37th birthday. So, yes, you did have to think about that then, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I knew it was my birthday. I just didn't know how old I was.
So Emma turns 37 on the 6th of December.
Mm-hmm.
And from me and all of our listeners, I'm sure, I'm going to say happy birthday. I'm not going to subject you to the singing.
Oh, good.
I might find that in post and record that quietly when you're all a bit asleep.
Oh, let's not do that.
We do have a special little thing happening for her birthday while we are on holidays, though.
It's not little. It's really quite exciting.
It is. And I'm sure
we have two amazing bucket list things.
So I'm sure that we can share some photos with that at some point. And hopefully by the time you're hearing this, our live stream at Warhammer World on the 29th has been and gone and has worked as we hoped. Hang on, I'll just do it in two bit. Unfortunately, our live stream on the 29th didn't quite work, so that way I've covered both bases.
Yeah, pick whichever one.
Whichever one worked whichever one was the most appropriate. By now I should have some new toys from Warhammer World as well. I don't know what they are yet, but
no.
Depends on what I can get in the suitcase.
At the moment, nothing.
No, that's true as well. So again, we are pre-recording this for you guys so that no one misses out on our dulcet tones while we are away.
Mm-hmm.
And after you hear this, the week after is again our live Ask Us Anything, and you'll see us bedraggled and jet-lagged and probably quite weird in front of the camera that week.
Yeah, because we're never normally weird, are we? Weird is our normal.
That is true. But look, rather than dilly-dally any further in this intro, why don't we take a quick break, mainly for my editing purposes, and we'll come back in just a second with the topic.
Happy birthday to you.
You live
in a zoo.
You
look like a monkey.
And
you smell like
one, two. I say? Ah, oh, well now.
Right, well, since I've just had enough time to get everything sorted, we're back now for our topic for episode 30.
Mm-hmm.
This is part two of our myths of tournaments and our quest to maybe shed some light on them, bust them occasionally, although I must admit most of the ones that we outright busted tended to be quite tongue-in-cheek in the first one, but there were a few extras that we felt we debunked a little bit, so...
Obviously, we're talking about myth busting. Really, I guess what we're hoping to do is just try and explore some of the myths and find out where they might have come from, and do we experience that as the cultural norm within the tournaments that we run and experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the questions today are a little bit more serious than our first episode.
Yeah.
Because we have put it out onto our Facebook page. You can find us at facebook.com/objectivesecured.
And we did all the light and fun ones at the beginning of last episode because they were nice and easy.
Yeah.
So we have got, some of the heavier ones. And I guess we'll see how we go with those.
Yeah. So where do you want... actually, you know what? We mentioned one in the last episode and then managed to completely miss it.
We didn't miss it.
Well, no, we did because I listened back to it when I did the edit and we said we'd come back to it and then we forgot it.
Well, yeah, because we're coming back to it today. But I thought that we might start at the top and scroll down.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
So this one's actually hidden. We put a post up on the Facebook page and just said, tournament myths, tell me what myths you've heard about tournaments. We're doing a podcast and I have a few, but I could do with a few more. And a lot of the ones that did actually come up were the ones that I had on my list, which is, I suppose that's a good thing. But one of the ones that was sort of buried in one of the comments through replies talks about toxic behaviour and toxic culture and boys' clubs. So I think probably to start with, it might be interesting to look at that idea of it being a boys' club.
Well, to put it into the context, this particular commenter isn't a WA local. He's actually from another part of Australia. And he's talking mostly about his own experiences within his local communities.
As a TO.
Yeah, as a TO. Mm-hmm. The tail end of it, though, where it says, if anyone says that tournaments don't breed boys' clubs and toxic behaviour, then they are lying and have lived an extremely sheltered gaming career or are one of the boys' clubs.
Mm.
That's the kind of the bit I want to address because I don't feel that's true.
Yeah. Okay, and I suppose just with the idea, I always think it's really interesting. For me, I like to define what do the different things mean. And it's obviously difficult because we don't have the people who posted these comments. We don't have them on here. So I have to apply my definition to this in order to be able to discuss it.
And we also don't have context either for some of these comments. And
no, that's right.
Yeah.
But when you're looking at a boys' club, I think there's probably two different things for me that come up there. The first one is the idea of a boys' club really is about the cliques that can exist within different gaming communities. But the other part is calling it a boys' club, does it then become a gendered space?
I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy at the moment in terms of it being a gendered space because that's kind of what it has been back before we've had any sort of progressive movement in trying to engage women and girls to be part of the hobby. And anyone who's been to our events or listened to us in the last couple of years knows that that's something that we're both keen on trying to break a little bit of that perception.
Yeah, for me, that idea about being a boys' club, though, means that girls and women are not welcome.
Yeah.
And it's not what I experience at all.
I think it's always an interesting one because you and I have had this conversation off the air.
We've probably had it on the air.
Probably. But it's
the lines are so blurred now.
But it's for me to come out and say that's crap I actually don't have the authority really to say that, because I'm essentially part of that issue, if you would, like, of the perceived issue, because I'm one of the community members who's reasonably well known in our community, a little bit elsewhere. Mm. So me coming out and saying that's crap just looks like I'm part of the problem.
Yeah.
So it's a really sensitive topic to talk about, because
it is a sensitive topic to talk about. I guess that, as you know, as a female, and I'm quite often one of the, you know, the only female in the room, or one of the two or three that happen to be in the room. I have never felt unwelcome. I've never felt like I'm intruding on the space. I've never felt like I'm, you know, like I don't fit in any way. I will admit, because we get so used to it being predominantly male, then we do both fall into the trap of saying, oh, the boys or the guys who are playing. Yeah. And, you know, we do tend to, you know, talk about it as grown men playing with toy soldiers. Well, I talk about it as grown men playing with toy soldiers. So I think sometimes our language can...
Yeah, but I think we're also both conscious of that language, and we try and...
We try to be, but we do also, you know, it just, because it is so predominantly male-dominated, that it just happens without us putting thought into it, you know, when we're tired, or, you know, which means subconsciously we do actually experience it as being more males than females.
But like I say, I don't think that's intentional necessarily.
No, it's not intentional at all, no.
I think that's just the way...
I don't know if
way...
that makes it better or worse, to be honest, though.
Oh, that's true. I mean, culturally and historically, it's been men.
Mm.
And... But part of that stems off of the conversation from the last episode about geeks and nerds and...
Yeah.
That perception that ran through the 70s and 80s when tabletop gaming and RPGs were kind of in their infancy. Gary Gygax had written D&D by that point. Games Workshop existed in 1978, I want to say, 77, 78 from memory. And they were distributing Dungeons & Dragons in the UK at the time. And that was a very male-focused hobby at the time.
Yeah.
Because culturally, that was the expectation. And I don't know which came first in that scenario, the chicken or the egg, but...
I'm just thinking as well, sorry, with... You mentioned Games Workshop. We have one female Games Workshop staff member here in Western Australia.
I think Mitch was telling me there's three in the country now.
Oh, I was going to say, I wonder how many there are.
He did tell me, he said to me that we're not the only state in Australia that has a female employee at Games Workshop now. I think he said it was three. I could be wrong. I apologise in advance if I am. But my understanding is there is at least one other apart from Guylaine, who is at our Morley store here in Western Australia.
Mm-hmm.
There is another, at least one more, which is interesting because...
Well, it's great.
We're starting to break into that stereotype.
Well, I think that the more that we have females who are, you know, like I'm at every single one of our events. And
I have to shout out Sarah then, because Sarah is the new casual down at Baldivis.
Ah.
I've just had a brainwave and remembered that picture.
So we've got two females.
We've definitely got two females in WA.
That's awesome.
She's working all over the Christmas period as the extra casual for all the extra trading. And whether that becomes permanent or not, I don't know. But I know that she's at the store now.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I think the more that we have females who are kind of active and visible in the community, then the more we're likely to break down that idea that it is only for men. And, you know, and I think Wayne made a comment on there as well saying that this game is for 50-year-old balding men who are trying to escape reality. You know, and it comes back to what we were talking about last.
He can say that because he's got a ponytail.
I think there's a quote about Bill Bailey, you know, that says something like, is it the hairy balding man? You know, like you don't have to, the two are not necessarily mutually exclusive. So, I've lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah. So I think that comes down to the stereotypes that we were talking about last week as well. It's not only 50-year-old balding men who are playing. It's men and women. And women are welcome. I think the women who are welcome at events are women who are interested in playing the game. If you want to play the game, doesn't matter what your gender is, what your...
No.
Any kind of defining feature, if you define yourself as... You know, by race or sexuality or gender or...
Religion or anything. It doesn't matter. I think part of it's also to do, and you know, Games Workshop gets a hugely negative rap from the gaming community at large. And, you know, whether it's, you know, whether it's sort of well-earned or not is irrelevant in this particular case, because they have, at least here in Western Australia, they have a great culture for their staff. And they're welcoming and inviting. We've got females who go to every one of those stores at some point in time. They paint, they game in the store. Yeah. The staff in Western Australia in particular have made huge efforts to be engaging to the hobby community, regardless of, like you say, any of those defining features. And that's what we experience day to day from our Games Workshop staff. And I think that's reflected in the increased amount of women and girls attending our events. Like, we've had girls coming and entering the painting competition at show.
And winning.
Yeah. So, and obviously, like I say, we had 9 out of 68 at the doubles event we ran in July.
Yeah.
Was it July? Yeah.
Which sounds terrible, you know, yeah, but it's actually awesome.
I was going to say, you won back the clock.
It's
even
15%.
Even talking to Chris about CanCon in episode 28, when we asked him the same question, he went, we'll have one this year because they've moved from LA.
Yeah, and they've
LA.
Never had them before.
And they've never had a woman playing at CanCon before. So when you compare a 4-hour flight to Sydney, that's the difference that we've got. So I definitely think that Games Workshop's staff in Western Australia have been a big impact on that, and that's a credit to past and present staff.
I definitely agree. So back to the point about the boys' club, I would like to define boys' club as actually talking about cliques.
Yeah. I think you'll always end up with little cliques happening because there'll be clubs and teams that naturally congregate together.
Yeah, again, I suppose it's that definition of what a clique is, isn't it?
But I was about to say, the ones that we see don't tend to be exclusive.
That's exactly it. So there's a difference between people who are friends and friends, or people who know each other and are familiar with each other, who gravitate towards each other because of that familiarity. I can't get that word out, but you know what I'm trying to
familiarity.
Say.
Familiarity.
I still think there's another illilililil in there. No. Anyway, it's all good. So, you know,
that's getting saved for an outtake.
So these people who will gravitate together, but they don't exclude other people from that.
No.
And even, you know, we're now seeing more gaming groups sort of pop up, but they're not exclusive in that they don't exclude other people from chatting to them. And
no, at the event, yeah, the guys who are in these semi-organized teams, for lack of a better description, are quite happy to chew the fat with any of the other gamers in the room. If you come over and chat to them and want to check out their armies, or they come over and check out yours, there's no, you know, bias there until you're across the table from them, and then they want their team to do well.
But the thing is that if two people from the same team are across the table from each other,
there's no whole bards there. It becomes bragging rights within the team to go,
exactly.
Beat you.
So I think that's, and it's one of the things that I did talk about in the article that I published way back when, which you're going to link in last week's show notes.
Yeah, which I didn't because I couldn't find it. So I'll have to.
Oh my goodness, it's not hard to find. Well, I know, because I read it before.
Make sure you give me the link
yesterday
for this one, and I will make sure it does it for this one.
Okay, awesome. So, and I talked about it, that for a new person walking in the room, I think that it would be easy to see that there were cliques there.
Yeah.
But actually, so for an event, I guess what I normally see is that people gravitate towards people that they know.
Yeah.
And then the people who are new to the tournaments, you can sort of see them looking a bit uneasy and not knowing anyone, and they sort of stand out a little bit at the beginning of an event. By the time lunchtime comes after round two, that's disappeared.
Yeah.
Because they've now made those connections and all of those kinds of walls have broken down.
I actually think one of the best examples we've ever had of that was Isaac. Mm. When he first came to an event, he didn't know anyone. He was quite shy. And he came up and was sort of having a conversation. We talked about his Death Guard, he and I. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, oh, if you love Death Guard, let's go and check this out. And I took him across to show him another Death Guard army. And by the end of that day, he wasn't even playing that day.
No.
And then he came back and he's come back to a number of different events since that day. And he's certainly not one of the the members of any of the teams or what you might perceive as a clique. But every one of the guys knows him and says, hi, Isaac, and has a chat to him. And he's been engaged and been brought into that community at the event as opposed to necessarily any one of the specific groups. And he floats around and chats to people and has a great time, and they're all happy to make him part of it, despite him not being one of their regular gaming buddies.
And I think that's, for what I experience, is because that's that shared and common bond over,
yeah,
you know, the love of the game.
And that's kind of what the ETC is all about, is that you're going to a foreign country where the English might not be the first language used, but you get to the table.
I think that the language of drinking is fairly universal.
Drinking has its ups and downs. We've never had any real issues with it at events. Uh-huh.
That was a flippant joke, yeah, then. But in all seriousness, sharing a beer with somebody is actually quite universal.
Absolutely.
So, and that's one of the things that we see often at events is end of an event, you know, good game, whether you won or whether you lost, can I buy you a beer, mate?
But I think that the act of that sort of building of that relationship could be replaced with the game itself, because they're essentially doing the same thing. They've picked something that both of you are interested in, enjoy, and, you know, you form some sort of relationship across that. So, in a way, they're both kind of doing the same thing. They're just, one reinforces the other.
Yeah, definitely.
So, that whole tournaments breed boys clubs and toxic behaviour.
Well, those two are potentially two different things. I personally haven't seen boys clubs at the events that I've attended. Now, I will preface that by saying that I've only attended events in Western Australia. I've attended R events, Crags events, Outpost events, and a couple of...
The store events.
A couple of store events and a couple of sort of privately run, yeah, events as well. So I haven't seen that boys club. I haven't seen, I'm only going to invite my friends. I haven't seen, I'm going to manipulate the results so that the people that I like win. I haven't seen writing a player's pack in a way that will, you know, serve a particular army or a particular player better because I'm friends with them. I haven't experienced that. And that, to me, is what I would see a boys' club being.
But even in the... And it might just be my personality that I can fit in, but when I've gone overseas or interstate for those other events, even when I went to High Lords of Terror in 2007, which was my first real trip to an event outside of state, I didn't know anyone else. Actually, that's not true, because one of the boys in Perth also got an invite and neither of us knew the other was going.
Ah.
But at the time, neither of us were actually friends either, if that makes sense. Like, we knew each other from events, but... Yeah. We certainly,
you knew someone, you know, you met them in the room, exactly, but not necessarily hung out and spent time.
So while I was in that room, I was essentially by myself.
Mm.
But at the same time, anyone I played or hung out with or chatted with, I was never excluded from any of that sort of stuff. And that's kind of followed on through the other events around the country and around the world, where you're still sharing something of a common interest. And yeah, like, I spoke to dozens and dozens of people at LVO and in groups and by themselves, and I never saw any of that. Like, no one ever excluded me or cold-shouldered me, or I could just have been oblivious to it, mind you, but I never felt that way.
Yeah, you could have been oblivious to it. I'm actually just thinking about some of our events and going through some different scenarios in my head. I guess I have seen a couple of times where people have sat by themselves at lunchtime and they've eaten by themselves. Is that because they, are they introverts and they actually need some time to kind of have some time where they're not talking to people? Or is it because they don't have the, I'm an introvert, and for me, going up to someone going, oh, can I sit with you to eat lunch, would feel really quite uncomfortable. And so, you know.
Whereas I'd quite happily go, who's the last guy I played? Yeah. Where is he? Okay.
I'm going to hang out with you, whether you like it or not.
Hey, man, you kicked my ass that game. What can we do? Like, yeah, what do you reckon I can do differently? And you can start a conversation that way.
Yeah.
But that's just the two of us being different people in that regard.
We really are very different people. But, you know, so I guess in that situation, and people, like, are in the nicest possible way, self-absorbed, you know. You
have to be. It's your life.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, you're chatting to that person and you're talking about this and, you know, so you might not notice that somebody's sitting by themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, to invite them to come and join in the conversation. But if somebody comes over and joins in of their own free will, I've never known anyone.
No, you don't get knocked back.
Give a cold shoulder or, you know, that kind of thing. So I guess for me, I haven't seen a boys club or cliques.
Mm.
Toxic behavior. What do you think he might mean when he talks about toxic behavior?
I'm going to put that down to his earlier comments.
Which is the slow playing, blatant cheating,
drunk, loose behaviour, which I'm assuming is...
My idea of loose behaviour was is very kind of promiscuous.
Yeah.
I have never seen any promiscuity at any of our events.
Unless you're Matt Davey. And then it's not really promiscuity so much as aggressive flirting. He's a lovely man, but if he knows you well, then he tries to know you really well. At least fully clothed, anyway.
He doesn't drink now, so that
no. But he also goes on to say a fair bit of toxic culture, and I'd like to think that the whole comment about toxic behaviour for me is that win at all costs, sort of cheating, slow play, all that sort of mess that comes from that win at all costs mentality. It's the bit about toxic culture that intrigues me because. Mm. It implies that it generates something within the community that is supported, condoned, and reinforced as the norm.
Yeah, so this, because I wasn't sure what he may mean by toxic culture, I've just done a quick Google search. So this talks about it being a culture that is marked by significant drama and infighting, where personal battles often harm productivity, and similarly... It can be an environment that negatively impacts on the viability of an organization.
Look, I can definitely see that definition being applied to different parts of the world because, you know, you will get infighting between different groups of organizers and, you know, even gaming clubs. You can get that happening in local communities. Mm. We don't experience that here. The respondent in this particular question, like I say, is out of state in a different community.
Yeah.
And the little time I've spent in that community, I played 6 games there and 6 games the year before against one of the team events against the same people from that same state. And they all seemed like regular gamers, anyone I'd expect to play. So... I know that their community is going through a bit of a crisis in terms of tabletop and gaming at the moment, but I certainly wouldn't have described, from an outsider's point of view, I wouldn't have described it as a toxic culture. Mm. And that might, if this stuff is going on in his community, then obviously that would explain his point of view.
Mm.
But it's not something we experience here for them. Like, it's certainly nothing that would be supported and condoned by the community.
It's really hard, isn't it? Because I think somebody's mentioned it and I was like, I don't see it. I don't feel it. And then I'm like trying to dig through and, do you think that could have possibly been perceived as such and such? So, but I think there's a possibility that if I'm having to dig through and try and find experiences that could possibly be
Then it's not likely to be a thing here.
Yeah.
And again, this comes back to your own personal situation, location, the culture outside of the gaming community, and there's a whole a whole raft of possible options as to why you might experience it differently to us.
Yeah. So let's say that a toxic culture does exist. What do you think that a tournament player can do to combat that?
But see, the problem with assuming that tournaments breed a toxic culture,
mm-hmm.
as in the tournament circuit has a toxic culture, is a very different thing to saying that we have a toxic gaming community, a toxic culture within our gaming community, because ultimately tournaments are not linked in any way other than by the organizer running multiples of them.
Mm.
So by saying that tournaments breed a toxic culture, I don't think they do. I think they might perpetuate it if one already exists within the community by excluding other clubs, by excluding specific players, by condoning certain behaviours like slow play and all the rest of it, by TOs allowing it to go on with certain players and not others. I think all of those things could happen at events that are being then sort of fed back into the community. But I feel like that it has to start at the community level before the tournament.
So, I'm going to perhaps do a backflip here. but I'm wondering, okay, so we're not seeing whether it's happening and we're, you know, oblivious to it. I fingers crossed hope that we're not. But we're not seeing a toxic culture within the events that we attend.
No.
In Western Australia. Do you think it's possible that there could be a toxic culture between gaming systems within
Absolutely.
Western Australia?
Yep, definitely. There's stigma attached to them for certain.
Exactly. So I guess in my head I'm thinking, well, what can people do? And so for us, and this is why I'm doing my backflip now, as I'm sat here thinking about it, I'm like, well, actually, this is why we started show.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons to try and break down some of those stigmas and to try and break down some of the stereotypes and the silos that exist.
But at the same time, that's not a tournament issue.
No, it's not a tournament issue. But
that's the comment, is that the tournaments are breeding the toxic culture and the toxic behaviours. It's not the tournaments doing it.
No, but what you just said is that the tournaments could potentially be...
Well, they're creating a feedback loop where those negative things happen. But that, again, that's not necessarily between game systems, because if you play 40K and nothing else, you going to a 40K tournament isn't going to impact your opinions on how bad X other game system might be, or how you perceive the players of that game system. That comes back to a community thing, not a tournament thing.
Yeah, I still think there's, you know, in X community, you know, in this particular community, we run all of our events, in this particular place, and it only costs this much, and we get all of these amazing things. And over here, this is what we're having to compare it to. So I still think that there may actually be that.
But that's still driven by community.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I am saying that it is, I agree, driven by communities and driven by the silos that are created between the different gaming systems. But I'm just saying that what is there a way that we could potentially look at trying to reduce some of those?
I think outside of tournaments, it's possible. Because, again, that just comes down to everyone being adults and, you know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you type stuff. If you don't like a game, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you don't need to go out there and abuse people who play a game. You don't need to tell them that they're idiots for doing it or spending money on this particular or that particular model. Live and let live. And
any other cliches you want to put in there?
No, I'm sure I can find some more. Let me keep going. It's all relevant stuff.
Yeah.
But with this particular comment, like I say, and I'll keep going back to it, is a fair bit of toxic culture. If anyone says that tournaments don't breed toxic behaviour, then they're lying. Tournaments don't necessarily breed toxic communities, and toxic behaviour is only bred in tournaments when the community permits it.
Mm-hmm.
So... I think tournaments present an opportunity for it to feed back onto the culture of the community, but they're not generating that in the first place.
Yeah, and I think that what does the community do to stop that toxic behaviour is you don't allow it to happen.
I think
What is it? Bad things happen when good people do nothing.
Yeah.
So just to add
you're
another,
finding cliches.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That was it. I wanted to join in. I didn't want to be left out. So it's about actually standing up and going, you know what, we're not prepared to condone that behaviour as players, as a group, as a community. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And so either conform to a positive behaviour and a positive standard, or please.
See,
don't
I don't even think it's do this or else. I think it's just a case.
No, I don't think it's do this or else. I just think it's that. By modelling positive behaviour, people fit with that. And if you're the only person that's modelling the toxic behaviour, you don't fit. You're not going to feel comfortable.
And you're not going to find yourself in a position where people are willing to engage with you on anything other than the most basic level.
Yeah, I do also think that...
Right, down to outright hostility.
But I do think that as TOs, we do have a responsibility that if there is toxic behaviour in the room, to actually call that out and to actually say, hey, you know what, that's not okay.
Oh, look, at ATC this year, there were a couple of tables where I've walked over and started giving time warnings and people were taking their sweet time. And without knowing who's or how's or what's, I've turned around and gone, cool, it feels to me like someone's slow playing. Here's a chess clock. We're going with it. And no one questioned it because it felt to me like there was slow playing going on by someone in the process. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of stuff that TOs can do immediately. If they feel like there's blatant cheating going on, you can watch the tables, you can monitor the behavior. Cheating and slow playing are two things that, as long as you're not doing it solo, you can tend to monitor. You know, if you've got a couple of people you're working with, you can monitor those as you think they're coming up. And when people's behavior starts to slip, either under the effects of alcohol or personality clashes, again, you can monitor and regulate that as needed. And
but like with this particular comment saying that there's drunk loose behavior, we have a responsibility when we serve alcohol at events. We have a responsibility
and you've got a legal
responsibility, literally a legal responsibility, responsible service of alcohol. So you know, I think that if you're getting somebody who's drunk, then you need to cut them off.
Yeah.
And we have a responsibility to do that.
And we've done that.
Yeah. It's not easy.
No, it sucks because you tend to get an irate drunk person.
Well, no, I think often it's not necessarily about that. It's just they're having fun and it's just you're having to draw attention to the fact that actually, you know what?
It's not fun for everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that doesn't feel comfortable for anybody involved. But I think that as TOs, we have a responsibility to sometimes have conversations that don't feel comfortable, but to have them early and, you know, try and be as transparent and as clear and open and honest as we can, and to do it in a way that's not likely to embarrass people. And but at the same time, try and maintain those standards. Does that sound fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a very sensitive area to walk through, this one, and we've tried to handle it in such a way that it's got a few different dimensions to it. But interested to hear what your thoughts are. You feel free to comment on the Facebook post when this episode comes out, or jump on the website and post a comment underneath the post.
Yeah, if you have experienced toxic
culture and behaviour,
then I'd really like to hear some specific examples.
And if you don't want to do it publicly, you're more than welcome to get in touch privately as well.
But if you could wait until after the 15th of December, that'd be great.
Well, by the time this goes out, that's not so far away.
It is. It's 10 whole days.
The next one's from Hammerhead Games, Tony.
Yes.
And we mentioned Tony in the last episode and then didn't get back to the question.
Well, I know, because I realised it was a tricky question. And so, okay, so Tony says that it's impossible to beat a local... Sorry. It is impossible to beat at a local one-day...
So the list that is impossible to beat at a local one-day three-round Rogue Trader tournament, so a smaller tournament...
Yep.
Is actually unbeatable and won't have a hard counter matchup once you hit the six-round, two-day GT major-style event. Just know that somewhere will have a list that you've never thought of, but... also hope to never see round one at the major. That's true.
Of course. But I guess I don't ever see any list that's impossible to beat.
No, there's certainly in the online communities, as soon as you have anyone win LVO or Adepticon or any of those other major events, people will go out of their way to go, oh my God, that's unbeatable, that's ridiculous. And as he points out in this particular post, taking one of those hyper lists that's been tuned and tuned and tuned and getting even a basic understanding of how to play it can lead a local casual community, like at a gaming store where there's the same 8 to 16 dudes and gals who turn up.
See? Carry on.
I'm being aware of my language.
Yeah, well done. Gold star for you.
They all turn up and play week after week and they do store tournaments. Someone rolls in and they're all kind of on the same floor where they're buying the stuff they like and they're painting the stuff they like, and then someone rolls in with a double Castellan Imperial Guard Battalion CP battery of Doom because they saw it at a big tournament that just smashed face, and then all of a sudden in a three-round tournament, they've got no equal. And then you start getting complaints of, well, that list's unbeatable. And what I suppose what he's saying here is that those lists that do go 3 for 3 at a one-day tournament aren't unbeatable, because the more players at the bigger events over a long period of time, you're inevitably going to find something that counters. We'll probably have seen it at Masters.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, yeah, we haven't had the event, but we published all the lists for the event.
Mm-hmm.
And going through those as a player, I cannot, like, I spoke to one of the other guys today, and he said, oh, how do you reckon I'm going to do? I said, I reckon you're going to go 5 and 1. And he went, oh, why do you think that? I said, because the chances of you avoiding this list, you know, eight or so lists out of the 60 in a 6-round event are so negligible that you're going to hit something that you can't deal with. And I think that the players who are good enough to overcome those obstacles are the ones who win those big events.
Yeah.
So the myth is the store's unbeatable list is never unbeatable.
And obviously the more rounds that the event has, yeah, the more likely it is that you're going to come upon a
counter. Yeah.
Yeah.
We at LVI played 2 orc lists back to back, and the army I took, my Corsairs, was actually designed to kill knights and riptides and the big stuff. And round 1, I played Tau with no riptides. Rounds 2 and 3 were orcs with stompers, and one with a giant squiggoth as well.
Mm.
That's my bread and butter for me.
Yep.
And both those players, when I killed the stomper turn 1 and the squiggoth turn 2, through void shield generators and everything, both players made the same comment. I've never seen anyone do that before.
Mm.
And it kind of highlights that, where if they've been taking that to a tournament week in, week out in their local area, and no one's been able to do it, and then they come to an event like LVO where there's 400 or 500 players, the chances of you, over those 9 rounds, meeting someone who can deal with it, with an army that you've never expected or experienced, just multiplies and multiplies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's no such thing as an unbeatable list, but it can look that way from a sort of a smaller pool of players.
Yeah. I agree. Okay, so Wayne, I think we covered this before. Wayne says that unless you're in the cool kids group, then you shouldn't bother going.
Unless you take your own cool kids group. Which is this cliques and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really think that if you're listening to this and you're thinking about coming to tournaments in 2019 and you haven't attended a tournament before, you're going to be welcome at the event, regardless.
Certainly
of,
at our events.
Yeah. Regardless of whether you come by yourself or whether you bring, you know, 5 best friends with you and and Harry.
Hi, Harry.
So, yeah, you know, everyone's welcome and regardless of anything. So,
I think it's easier, though.
It goes back to that definition of nerds, isn't it? We don't have any cool kids who come.
I think it's important, though, that a lot of people feel more comfortable when they're going with someone. They're walking into a new room, and even if they both lose the games or one wins and one loses, it's easier to swallow that when you know someone else in the room.
Yeah. Well, it depends. If one of you, you know, ends up coming third and the other one ends up coming third last, it's quite hard to swallow, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to talk about the intimidation factor later on.
I was just looking at Wayne's second part. When handing your result slip in, $100 under the result slip should improve your scores.
Yeah, so sadly we've gone to a paperless tournament now.
Yeah, a lot of tournaments are paperless these days. So we'll have to talk about PayPal details and
that's right.
You know, BPay and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Myth confirmed. I know, just we are kidding. For some of you may have seen, we spoke in the last episode about one of the attendees for Masters, Ryan, who's done all of our logos and things. He finished his degree, and you know, and he said that it would, you know, Masters win would just cap off the end of the year nicely. And so if I could do something about that, that'd be great. And I made a joke going, yeah, look, I'll see what I can do. I'm sure I can work something out. And your response was, no, you can't. Well, no, of course I can't.
It's no.
It's a paperless tournament. We're joking.
Yeah, and that's why I was joining in with that joke. But
sure you were.
It's hard to come across in text.
Yeah, no, I'm joking. Richard says, only whack players play at tournaments. We already busted that myth. Tournaments are played by balding men in their 50s trying to escape the real world.
I'm not 50 yet.
No, that's true. So tournaments are played by men who are bald or very hairy or bald and very hairy. They're played by men. They're played by people from, we've had, was nine the youngest we've had all the way through to
in his 60s.
60s, maybe early 70s. Trying to escape the real world. Maybe. I might pay that one.
But that's fine.
Yeah, like, definitely.
Escapism from movies, from for video games,
yep.
Tabletop gaming, role-playing RPG, you know, any of that stuff, the whole point of these
activities. And if you're a parent listening to this, then get your kids into tabletop wargaming because they'll never be able to afford escapism through drugs.
No.
So it's got to be healthier than that, right? That covers all the ones that we got in through the Facebook page. So I'm just going to check whether or not any of the ones that I had didn't get covered. And I think that the biggest one for me is that it's intimidating walking into a room when you're a brand new player. And whether that's intimidating walking into a room if you are just starting in the game or if you're coming back to it. You know, if you're a woman walking into a room with 60 men, you know, that kind of experience of it being intimidating when you walk in.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the first tournament you go to, particularly if you're going by yourself, is always going to be a bit confronting. And we've had players in the past kind of almost stumble at the last moment.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Going, nope, I can't go into that room because there's 60 people there that I don't know. And they're all chatting and talking and they're in their little groups and it's loud and it's like, oh, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And
I totally get that. You know, for me, the first time that I went to a tournament when you were playing, I actually think it was at an Armadale tournament.
Yeah, probably.
And I'm fairly sure I came only because you accidentally walked out with my set of house keys.
Probably.
And so I had to bring, well, I think we had two kids at the time. I had to bring both kids down and, you know, it was a room where it was really packed and it was dark and there wasn't much room between the tables and I was petrified one of the kids was going to knock something, you know, so, but it was still quite intimidating. Well, there must have been 20 people playing. But it was still quite intimidating walking into that way. And I think I was just thinking like my first tournament would have been when we ran the one.
In the old dingy hall downstairs at South Perth.
At South Perth, yes. So this one that I went to, see, I guess if I'm running it, then I feel much less.
Well, you've got a level of authority at that point.
Yeah, I have to completely fake it and pretend that I'm confident. So, you know,
what are you doing telling people that on these recordings?
Well, I think it's okay to tell people that because that way that they know that I'm quaking inside too. And if I can do it, so can they. I'm being authentic. I'm trying it out.
Fair
being
enough.
Authentic, telling you how I fake it. How's
that? Yeah, it's define irony.
Yeah. But it can be really intimidating.
See, it's funny. It's I've never experienced anything like that.
No.
So, but again, I think that's a personality type. Definitely. As opposed to anything else because... Yeah. I don't recall even going into the very first tournaments we've played with a level of apprehension. I've gone in there going, this is amazing. I'm doing this. This is great. Mm. But that's who I am.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of it being intimidating, just I can't sort of wrap my head around. Mm. I can understand how it could be, but...
Yeah, I guess if you think about it, going in there, and this particular player, you know, I love. He's absolutely beautiful. He's loud and he wahs so, you know, that literally lifts the room and half...
We've missed him this year.
We have. Half the room will stop and jump and look around and try and work out what the heck's going on.
I'm hoping the Orc Codex brings him back.
If you're new to the tournament scene and that happens in the first 15 minutes of...
Round one,
it's going to be a shock.
His name starts with an R. He knows who he is if he's
exactly
listening.
He knows exactly who he is.
And he better be there in 2019 with his orcs.
Yeah, but, you know, that kind of, and the noise levels in the room and the sheer number of people and, you know, the exquisite armies that some people bring, all of those factors are all things that could be potential barriers to people coming into tournaments.
Yeah, see, whereas for me, all of those things are the reason I would go.
Yeah, whereas all those things are the things that would have me in the car park going, nah, I cannot do this. I can't walk into that room not knowing anybody else. My models don't come anywhere close to matching up to those other people's models. I just can't.
Literally yin and yang at this point.
I know. Yeah. I really am very aware. So
20 years, I'd hope so.
Although it turns out I didn't know you didn't like cherries, but hey. What are some of the things that people could do to potentially make it less intimidating to some of those new players?
See, it's funny because you don't want to have people go the other direction too far and just end up looking like creeps when they go running to the door whenever a new player walks in the room. And
don't say that. I always run to the door whenever a new player walks in the room.
Yeah, okay.
I'm trying to be friendly and caring. I'm a creep.
Both of us make a point when we see faces in the room that either aren't...
I can understand them thinking you're a creep.
Thanks. No. I'm not going to shave for the whole holiday, so I come back looking like a big feral man.
What? It's nothing to do with what you look like. Far out. Although, yeah.
Thanks. No. Jesus Christ, that was lovely.
No, sorry. Although actually, I wouldn't mind if you did shave the beard off. But that's got nothing to do with anything else. So I decided to stop the thought in my
head.
Which
didn't help.
It really didn't help.
I don't know. I think when you see someone come into the room that you don't know, you don't have to go running up and engage them straight away. You let them come in. You let them sign in, find their space. A lot of guys will come in and start pulling their armies out and stuff.
Yeah.
And it gives you an initial contact point to go, hey, dude, they look awesome. Or, hey, can I check that model out? I haven't seen that before. Or just, hey, what are you playing today, man? Like, those sorts of basic leading questions can help break the ice a little bit, because you don't need to know anything about the other person because you're talking a common language at that point.
Yeah.
And I think that doing it in a neutral fashion with a genuine interest in what's going on, people can tell when you're being fake. Mm. So if you have no interest in engaging with new people, that's fine.
Yeah, that's it.
But at the same time, if you decide, hey, look, you know, I want them to be part of the community, and, you know, if you've already got that in your head that that's something you want to support, then you're probably going over with genuine interest anyway. So, you know, we're going to have a number of players in at Masters that their names I don't recognize.
Mm.
And I feel like for day one, at least, both of us will probably be keeping just a little bit of an extra eye on the faces that we don't necessarily know. We'll try and get used to remembering their names. I'm shocking with names. That's why you'll be mate or buddy or... I am getting better.
No, you're not.
I am.
No.
I am. But I still suck at it, and I'm aware of that.
Yes, you do.
So I use all of my sales history to not have to deal with that. But at the same time,
I'm normally quite good with names, except...
if you're a Horton.
Well, that's not fair. There's hundreds of them.
What I'm saying is, though, those new players, we're not hovering because we don't know you. We're hovering because we want to make sure that what you're experiencing day one is, you know, everything that we want it to be.
Yeah, we want you to feel included and welcome.
So,
we will generally try and say hello. If we see someone looking a little bit lost, then we'll wander over and ask if there's something that we can do. If you are...
Turn away some of the random people who come in looking for art gallery exhibitions and church groups.
Quite often they're looking for the plant sale. Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely plants in this room. The church groups are the ones that I see the most of at that hall, because they're used to having their couple of hours on a Sunday morning, and we book the hall instead. And you have to politely explain to them that, no, there's no service this morning.
No, but they don't... think that's okay. They're normally quite happy to have a wander around.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
Ask about it, and the more people who are asking about it, you know, I know I had one lady who was looking for a plant sale, and then she took one of the flyers for the rest of the events and then brought her grandson back to the following event. So, you know, I'm more than happy to chat with random people that are waiting for the bus who decide to kill 15 minutes by coming in to check out what's happening on the tables.
Yeah, or the players at the end of the day who've forgotten how to get home by not looking at the bus routes.
Yeah, I'm happy to chat with them too. we will talk to people about, you know, we'll go and introduce ourselves, or we generally say, hey, look, we're the people who are wearing the bright orange shirts. come and find us. And, you know, so we generally stand out. So we always encourage that. But also, I think that if there are players out there who are interested in coming to tournaments, who are perhaps probably more like me than like Mike, and who maybe feel a little bit uncertain or unsure about walking into that room for the first time, if you send us a message and let us know that, then it just means that when you're walking in, you know that you can come over and connect with us, and then we will help you make some of those connections once you're in the room and kind of go, you know, take you over and find another Orc player that you can stand with, because there's two of them coming to Masters now, so
there
we
are.
Can put them together and they can be friends.
Well, we had something with Masters actually where one of the guys has accidentally submitted his army list and it's 9 pages long when it's turned into a PDF because he's it's his, one of his first tournaments, if not his first. I don't recognise the name and I could be wrong. He submitted it as a battle scribe file, and he's not ticked. He's not unticked all the options, so it's literally printed
everything.
And I didn't spot it when I was converting the PDF. It was 83 pages, and I thought that was a bit big for 58 players.
Not really, though. You know,
well, 2 pages a player.
2 pages per player is reasonable.
Although
if one player is taking up 13 pages, then that's.
And it is in the players pack that says don't use any battle scribe files. Yeah. Please handwrite your lists. He didn't spot that in the players pack, and he sent us a message saying, oh my God, I'm really sorry, I'll rewrite it for you. I've gone, it's not a problem. Mm. You know about it, you won't do it again. Mm. And the reason that I don't like these files is these reasons. It's not for what you've done, but this is the reason I don't like accepting them in this format. So I could easily see how that could be I'm not doing this again because I've messed it up and... You know, I don't want to be that guy in the room that's messed this up and made all these people look
at me. Everyone's going to be looking at me and judging me. And they're all going to know.
When it's,
that would be what I would be thinking, just to clarify.
You know, it's an honest mistake.
Yeah. And we all make mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I say, I guarantee he won't do it again.
So, yeah.
Because he'll remember this as a moment of, yeah, I got to remember to not do that. Yeah, like I can easily see that being a case of him wanting to come and see us as soon as he hits the room, and he may or may not have. We don't know, given the event hasn't happened yet.
Yep.
But I could easily see that being a case of him coming to find us and going, look, I'm really sorry I did this, and in his own head he's going to make it bigger, potentially. Depending on his personality type, he might make it bigger than it actually is. Mm. So they're the sort of players that when they're new... You know, come and find us and...
Yeah.
I guess we learned the hard way back when that we should wear bright orange so you can find us.
Yeah, we learned 4 years ago.
Yeah, this week for this event.
How unlike me to be going off on a tangent. The reason that we wear bright orange is... So our very first event was Masters 2015.
Yep.
And we got some sponsorship through Secret Weapon Miniatures. And with that, they actually sent you a bright orange shirt.
Yep. Sponsorship shirt.
Yes. And so on the Saturday, because it was a 2-day event, Saturday and Sunday, on the Saturday, Mike wore the bright orange shirt. And I was only there for, I wasn't there for the full weekend anyway. But when I was looking for him, he stood out because out of 64 players, I'd say probably 50 of them were wearing black and 10 were wearing grey and the other 4 were probably wearing dark blue. So lots of dark colours in the room and one bright
iridescent orange shirt, yeah.
And when I was standing on the top floor, I could spot him easily anywhere in the room. The second day, obviously the orange shirt was somewhat manky, which brings us back to the comment in the last episode, apply yourself to reapply with deodorant.
Wouldn't have mattered. We had no air conditioning in that venue. That was hot.
We did have air conditioning.
It just didn't work on the ground floor, no.
I was really happy I was working upstairs that day. The beautiful air conditioning with the bar. The second day, Mick wore black.
No, I actually got given a shirt that day by a few of the local players because the second day was my birthday.
It was your birthday, yes.
And they gave me a Star Wars t-shirt that matched. There were 6 of them that all came in the same shirts. Right. That was Gillian and Pete and
Mitch and Nick.
That sort of gaming group. and they gave me a shirt to match, and that was a black and white Star Wars shirt.
Yes. So then you've got, you know, 64 players and 50 of them are in black, and he's one of them in black.
Yep.
So that's the reason why we both wear bright orange, because this way we stand out. There are very rarely that anybody else comes to an event in bright orange. I think it's happened.
I know. I was going to say, Ghislaine again at one point came to an event, and yeah, it wasn't quite orange, but it was a really fiery red.
And Joe had it as well.
Yeah,
with one of the events, he's like, they keep coming up and asking me questions.
So. Yeah, the players are definitely used to us wandering around in orange.
Orange, yeah.
So, yeah, if you do need to find us at any of our events, literally we are wearing bright orange. Anytime we don't do it, was show.
Show, yep.
But that's also because we want to make sure we're all in the same colours, all the volunteers, all the staff, and everyone's in the same colours. And unfortunately, due to the fairly diverse nature of everyone who pitches in and helps, sometimes we can't get shirts in the right shapes and sizes.
No.
So we have to stick to black, white and grey.
Yep.
Although you did find that beautiful orange jacket, but that is where we're off a tangent now.
Mm, yes, we really are.
Anything else on our list?
No, those are probably the main. The other ones that I had, I think we've sort of covered in the other... In the other episode and all that we've covered already. I was going to briefly mention... Oh, so I did also do another blog post around...
No, we're still on myths. We're not...
Yes, I know.
Okay. I just thought it sounded like you were wrapping up.
No, I'm not. I did also do another blog post. It was a while ago now, before show, around one of our values is inclusion.
Yep.
And it's a tricky one for us because we believe it should go without saying.
Yeah, that's part of my obstinance, yeah.
Well, no, we both believe that inclusion should go without saying, because for us, it's just part of our life values that we include people regardless of any other defining feature. But coming back to what I was saying before around people being welcome at events regardless of anything, we have covered that as well.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Well,
I'm sure I had a point for why I was bringing it up, but we've done so many tangents now that I forgot what it was.
Well, the weird thing for me as well at this point is that I don't think there's anywhere in this I'm going to be able to put my rubber stamp noise. So I'm going to do it right now and say that the myth of you're not allowed to come to events if you're not a white male stereotype is busted, because you are. You're allowed to come to our 100%. Events. Regardless of anything. If you want to come and play games...
I think that might have been it around the whole boys club thing.
Yep. If you want to come and play games... and roll dice or flip cards at me in Malifaux, I don't care. As long as you're there to play the game and enjoy the game, mm-hmm. I don't care. Yep. So the myth of this whole
boys club,
white male gaming exclusivity, no. Come along and play.
Beautiful.
Anyway, we're going to wrap up the episode now, and we'll be back in just a second. So that was part two of Mythbusters, and I don't feel like that was as much mythbustery as much as a conversation around culture and some of the negative aspects of it. So I think there's some nuggets of myths in there that we've kind of debunked, but at the same time, I think it opens up a whole new conversation to have that is almost global in nature.
I think this was probably a little bit deeper than the ones that we covered last week. Like I said earlier, last week I did cover the easy ones.
Last episode, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's all blurring together at the moment. This is what happens when you try and record too many episodes in advance.
Yeah. Anyway.
So
what else have we got coming up now?
Well, after you hear this, you'll next have us live again on the... What do we say, like the 11th of December? 12th of December.
12th of December.
We'll be live on Facebook again. You'll probably be getting photos, at least while we're at Warhammer World and whatnot, through the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have some wrap-ups and photos and stuff to do to talk about as well.
I think now our kids are asleep, we can tell you that when this goes live, we will be...
In the snow in Finland.
We will be. we'll have been visiting Santa and getting ready to go see the Northern Lights.
Yep, up in the Arctic Circle.
Mm.
So a brisk, what did we decide it was going to be? Like minus 11, I think, was the average for December up there.
Yeah.
So nice and warm. We're going to have to announce our 2019 event schedule.
Yes.
And show 2019 is also...
1, 2, 3 of June.
1st, 2nd and 3rd of June, which will hopefully be able to start announcing stuff after our visit to Warhammer World as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, sort of this was... you know, there's, I think, one more podcast before Christmas at the time of listening. And then we move into the new year. That episode might be all about the toys I brought back.
Mm.
Or one big toy, depending on how much I can swindle. I wish I could get that look on video, on audio. It just it doesn't translate. The noise doesn't even quite translate to the face I'm getting.
It's okay. I'm fairly sure anybody who's suggested to their wife that they spend that amount of money on a Warlord Titan knows exactly what face I'm pulling.
And all the guys who are listening to this are cheering it on, going, yes.
Yes, I know. I'm well aware. I know. I am so outnumbered, it's just not funny.
I know, but like, unfortunately, this is one of those ones where bank balance plays a factor in it. You know, if it was like a normal model, I'd have bought it by now.
Yes, I do.
So, anyway.
I wonder, and I'm going off on a tangent.
Again.
But like I just said, I'm fairly sure any of the guys who have suggested to their wife that they buy this. How many of the women do you think who are playing, how many of them do you think have partners who play?
Well,
I'm just wondering if, you know, if a female partner says to her partner, I want to spend X amount of $1,000 on a Warlord Titan, what kind of response that would get?
Well, thinking about the women who come to our events, almost all of them have a partner who plays.
Mm.
In fact, I think all of them do.
No? There's one that I know of that doesn't.
Okay. Mm. So I think the majority of those guys would only be objecting on the fact that she was going to have it and they weren't.
Yeah.
And at that point, it'd be, can I have it? Can I build it? Can I paint it? Can I keep it? Can I use it?
We can't both have one. None of us are having one.
Exactly. Like matching cars. No?
Well, no, I was just thinking, I do want a new car. So how about you get a Warlord Titan and I get the new car?
Well, it depends on the on the car. And there's a significant difference between a car and a Titan.
Exactly. If the car's useful.
If you're spending $2,000 on a car, go nuts. If you're spending $20,000, then I want a maniple, not just one.
I'm thinking about buying a new car so that we can get obstacle terrain to and from events. So I really don't think that you...
That doesn't fix my Titan issue.
No, it doesn't. But it does help with our issue with getting... all right.
More players at events.
Do we have anything to actually discuss or are we just going to bicker?
No, I think we're good at the moment. I think that's everything. We're going to have our patrons only event in January, which will be invited just to the guys who are supporting us on Patreon.
And, or girls if we have any by then.
Yep.
You are organising your regular...
My apocalypse event.
Apocalypse game.
Yep, we're already talking about that. If everything goes to...
I'm sorry, you guys have left it late.
What do you mean?
Last year, you guys started planning January's event in May.
Yeah, look, I think there's been a lot of life changes. Like one of the players has had another baby since then. And then we've had another one who's had to sort of focus on his own personal life as opposed to spending so much time gaming. So we've had a few hiccups in the group of us who would normally play the game. So we've brought a new player in, Sly Dave, to help me out with the Eldar side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to shuffle around who's team this year. And I'm probably going to have about 4 weeks to build and paint a Reaver Titan by the time we get back to the time of the game. So that's going to be entertaining. It's in the house. So it's already like 20 meters closer to being completed than it was yesterday. So...
If you touch that Reaver Titan before we go on our holiday...
I haven't.
This will be recorded... Just shy of us going into the divorce courts.
Well, I won't publish it then, will I? So it's not a problem. Mm. It sat just like 3 feet behind you
it
in the tub.
It can stay 3 feet
I haven't
behind
touched
me in
it.
The tub.
I haven't touched it.
Yeah.
Yet. yeah, we do. I think this will be the fourth one we've done or the fifth one we've done.
Gosh, I can't even remember.
I don't know. It's at least four I can think of. Maybe it's the fifth.
I'd say it's the fifth.
So there's a group of us. It started as just the two of us, and now there's four of us.
Mm-hmm.
And in eighth edition, we're now playing power level, and we turn up with, last year was 400 power a player, so 800 power a side, which is about 16,000 points a side. Must be WYSIWYG, so you can't do any silly things with power. So you have to, whatever the model looks like on the table is what it has. And
my favourite thing about the game that you guys played in January this year was the, who got to go first.
Oh, the setup. Yeah.
So they...
that was so good.
They had
That's
to,
a standard apocalypse rule.
Well, they had to say how long they would take to deploy. What is it? To deploy or
yeah,
to set
to deploy.
And I think one...
We said 3 minutes.
Said 3 minutes.
Thinking
and
that's
said,
enough.
They said 1 minute, didn't they?
Yeah.
Now... Yeah, oh my goodness.
That's on video, actually. You can find that if you go back to January of 2018 in the videos on the Objective Secured Facebook page. It's there.
It was just hilarious seeing these guys, like this power squats that they were doing to get these models on the table.
I love the fact that Dizzy was...
Everything set up. Everything had to be facing the right direction. Everything.
Well, when Dizzy put that Reaver Titan down, he was stood there holding it like a baby, with its feet 3 inches off the table going, it's not deployed yet. I can hold it here like this. It's not deployed yet. We don't start the timer yet. You haven't picked. I haven't put it on the table yet, which is how we put that down first.
Ooh.
And then...
Then the power squat started.
Yes, because they were both playing Astra Militarum for the most part. There was some Space Marines and some Knights and stuff, but for the most part, it was guard tanks. And they must have deployed 50, 60, 70 tanks within a minute of just throwing them
seconds.
On the table.
Yeah.
And they didn't get everything deployed because they only had a minute to do it in. Like both of them left whole trays of miniatures off the table that they just didn't get done. And we, Troy and I at the time, were thinking, oh, you know, 3 minutes, we've got less models than them. We reckon we can do it pretty comfortably in 3 minutes. That should be enough to go first. Nah. And I blame it on the fact that their tanks are boxes and they're not on flying stands. And they had these big trays that they just moved up to the table and sort of shuffled models off of. So it's going to be interesting. We're going to mix it up this year and make sure that there's a little bit less bias in that regard so that it gets a bit more interesting.
It was interesting.
Oh, it was hilarious to watch. And like I say, if you want to check out that video, head to the Facebook page.
It's the only part of that game that was fast.
We got 4 turns in on that day. At 16,000 points aside over the space of 7 hours, I reckon we did pretty bloody well.
Yeah.
But yeah, the video is definitely worth checking out to watch how you deploy 16,000 points of guard in 1 minute. Anyway, we're going to wrap up the episode now. We hope that you're all staying safe and having fun in your December.
Getting ready for Christmas, if that's what floats your boat.
And we'll see you live on the 12th of December. And then one more podcast before Christmas.
Yes.
So, everyone, enjoy your gaming while we're off jet setting. And we'll see you for the next episode.
We sure will. Happy gaming, everyone.
You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook.com/Objective Secured, or you can email us obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.